I'd like to call this meeting of the Oregon Board of Forestry to order, and first item is to perform a roll call. Nils Christofferson will not be attending today. Cindy Deacon Williams will be here, but she's going to be a little late. Joe Justice?
Here.
Jim Kelly?
Here.
Brenda McComb?
Here.
Mike Rose?
Here.
And I'm Tom Imason, so we do have a quorum. As a reminder, this public meeting will be live streamed all day, so as usual, it would be helpful for people to silence their electronic devices for the duration of the meeting. Also, in order to ensure the board has the opportunity to conduct all of the business on the agenda for its meetings, public comment for agenda topics will be limited to no more than 30 minutes and received upon conclusion of the topic's presentation. A sign-up sheet is available for public comment on a first-come, first-served basis. Our first item is the consent agenda. Question is there a motion for approval of consent items A through G? I'd note that we have a couple of those items are action items and the other items are informational items.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Yes, Brenda.
I had a question, and I'm trying to find it now. The results of the monitoring work for state and for private forestry. Later in the board book, there is information about that work being reviewed by Oregon State University. So I'm wondering, by approving the consent agenda with those numbers, are we do we have to have some caveat in there that this is being reviewed?
Well, we're not reporting any numbers for this year. The numbers for this year are no data, because we were going to start the compliance audit on reforestation, and we were planning to report numbers for that. So the numbers they reported in this year, so the number you're referring to, the 97%, which
yes,
the review was reported a year ago prior to the concern being raised. So that's sort of historic data that's in the system. Once we have the report, if there's a need to confirm or affirm that or put a caveat into that, we would do, but we report on an annual basis. And the report this year is no data.
Does that answer your question? Or?
Okay, thanks.
Okay, moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. And the next item is the state forester's comments.
Thank you, Tim. Good morning. I'm going to open up with a tribute to Wayne Giese, who died on July 28th of this year at the age of 99. You may have noticed that we've reserved a chair in the front row in honor of Wayne's decades-long engagement with the Board of Forestry. Wayne was committed to active forest management and the idea that timber harvesting and conservation can coexist. His love of the forest and unwavering persistence in discussing forest policy issues made him a common name around the Oregon State Legislature, natural resource boards, and commissions. Wayne's pursuit to promote the importance of a balanced active management plan kept him active and made a considerable impression on the Board of Forestry and department staff. Here are some thoughts from former state foresters. From Doug Decker, Wayne was a force of nature and an energetic advocate and believer in Oregon's forest. He was often the first person to arrive in the room as we set up for a board meeting and the last to leave. And he got to know and appreciate our staff on a first-name basis. I appreciated that he spoke exactly what was on his mind, and he did it with respect and almost always with a sense of humor. His presence at board meetings and tours provided a tangible connection for everyone to a past we didn't live through but tried to understand. I send my good wishes to his family, colleagues, and close friends who can mark the passing of a life well lived of an Oregon original and a passionate friend of forestry. And from Jim Brown, Wayne was always a gentleman. He was a staunch advocate for good management on private and public forest land, but recognize there could be differences in management approaches. So please join me in a moment of silence to thank Wayne for his dedication to the forest lands and communities of Oregon. mid-August and early September is the time when fire season peaks. Doug Graff and Blake Ellis will give a detailed fire report as our first topic, and I'm pleased to say that we have had a welcome respite from the fire seasons of the recent years. That said, I thank our district folks who have done an incredible job catching fires early in initial attack. They contained all but one fire from the last lightning event in August at 10 acres or less. Behind the scenes of all this work is an incredible support team at the district, area, and statewide level that often goes unnoticed. I also acknowledge and thank our partners, especially the landowners, operators, and contractors who have been critical to our success in all aspects of our mission, from finance to daily operations on the ground. It also happens to be the 50th anniversary of the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, who have been a long-time partner in our fire protection system. And as you know, they're a board-appointed committee, and I would like to publicly thank them for their years of service to the department in Oregon. Moving on, the governor's office announced Oregon's 100-year water investment vision in 2018. You have a one-pager with your materials there on the table. There's some in the back. The 2017 Integrated Water Resource Strategy provides the foundation for this work, charting the course for Oregon's in-stream and out-of-stream water resources needs. The 100-year vision picks up on those themes, designing approaches with the intent of developing an investment strategy to address those issues. Oregon is known for clean and reliable water due to both favorable climate and the infrastructure we built in the 19th and 20th century to effectively move water from its source to where it is used. As has been identified in the Oregon's Integrated Water Resource Strategy, three forces combine to place significant stress on Oregon's water. Climate change and an associated increase in fire, drought, and flooding. A half a century of underinvestment in built and natural infrastructure. Our changing population and associated development. These factors impact the quality and quantity of waters for our community, including water in our rivers, lakes, reservoirs, and aquifers. Simply put, if we're not willing to roll up our sleeves and work together to invest in our natural and built water infrastructure, we place the safety of our communities, the health of our people and environment, and Oregon's economic future at risk. Phase one of the water vision will focus on gathering information. This summer and fall, we'll be embarking on a concerted effort to listen, learn, and gather information from a broad base of Oregonians. I have distributed the draft version of Oregon's 100-year water vision, preparing for a secure, safe, and resilient water future for all Oregonians. And I will follow up with board members in an email with this electronically and a frequently asked questions and some asking you for some feedback that we're looking for. We'll compile that from individual board members, and we can discuss it further at the October retreat and explore if the board wants to engage in this topic further. As I discussed at the last meeting, this meeting initiates the board's strategic planning cycle. This meeting will focus on an assessment of Oregon's forest conditions and issues to help the board focus their work over the next 2 years. This assessment, as I've said, is going to feed into the October retreat, and the morning will focus on the forestry program for Oregon, the board strategy for sustaining Oregon's public and private forests. The afternoon will focus on the department's strategic plan and our 2-year strategic initiatives. These initiatives will influence board work plans and the development of policy option packages and budget requests for the 2021 legislative session. As I've said, and I'll keep repeating because I want you to remember this, the board's strategic plan, the forestry program for Oregon, guides the department and helps align the board and department's policy direction. The department looks to this strategy for guiding its work, and we plan to gauge your interest on revising it. At the October retreat, we'll focus on the board's values as values guide how science is used to inform policy. In a week or so, I will be sending out some pre-work on the board's current set of value statements to get your feedback and prepare for the discussion in October. And at the November meeting, we'll be holding a science and policy workshop related to our strategic planning process. And I just wanted to thank you for your feedback. It's well appreciated. And we're using that feedback to adjust the plan for the workshop. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for Peter? Any additional comments from board members?
Myself, I'd just like to thank Peter for his comments about Wayne Giese. I think they're completely appropriate. And I had gotten to know Wayne well before I was a member of this board, and not necessarily just on forest issues, but he really was one of a kind. And he put an incredible amount of energy into the work that this board does. And as Peter said, always engaged in a very respectful way, which we appreciate. So we do have some public comment this morning for folks who want to appear on items that aren't on the agenda. If I can just find the sheet of paper that has the names on them. Right here, Jay Halliday, Hannah Higgerberg, and Claire Clock. Why don't you all come up and be happy to hear your comments.
Me? In order called? My name's Jay Halliday. I'm a property owner immediately adjacent to Norriston Heights. And thank you for the second opportunity to address our concerns about this potential timber sale. You deal with a lot of issues that come up, and I was a board member and ran my own business. And I learned that a well-thought-through, persistent, and logical conversation brought desired results. And I'm concerned that there's kind of a rush to judgment on this particular issue, so I'm requesting that you instruct the ODF to take the Norriston Heights timber sale out of the upcoming ODF planning cycle. Since my testimony on the 24th of July, I've spent a lot of time understanding the issues surrounding these timber sales. We could talk about whether ODF is following its protocols and or definitions in changing the definitions of this particular parcel, and also looking at the way it deals with endangered species on this to position this for timber sale. We could talk about that. We could talk about clear cutting and whether that's the right way to approach something like this right next to a neighborhood. And we could also talk about whether it's, you know, financially or sustainable or ecologically sustainable to harvest these sales in this manner. Not going to go down that route because that's trying to solve world peace in 3 minutes. But what I'd like to do is bring your attention to two things. Your team has not lived up to its charter for transparency in contacting our neighbors. And we are very concerned about our water quality, and it's interesting that this water vision the draft is being presented this morning. I've had some time now to talk to my neighbors. None of our neighbors were proactively touched by ODF staff members prior to the close of public comment on this particular proposed sale, prior to that May 2nd close of public comment period. We found out secondhand, thirdhand. We've since engaged with members of your team. We're providing feedback, but the team still hides behind some pretty stale comments about how we're hard to find. We should have found out ourselves. And, oh, we're hard to find. We're hiding right across the street from this proposed sale site. So I think part of transparency is saying we were wrong. We didn't do it right. And I think that the ODF staff needs to come back to the neighborhood and say, we didn't approach this right with you. Secondly, and as your water vision states, contamination, chemical contamination and intrusion into civic drinking water supplies is becoming a bigger and bigger issue here and nationally. You know, the Flint, Michigan situation brought a lot of that into the press. We appreciate that ODF staff members have done some research and have presented some research to us. We don't think it's adequate. And frankly, we think it's a bit biased towards the answer of selling this timber. We're concerned that the pesticides and herbicides that would come after a clear cut have potential to damage our water supplies. This is our sole water supply for the next 20 to 30 years. So in closing, would like to ask that you request that the agency postpone this sale so that we can all understand what the ramifications are. And you know, we're not the only ones concerned. There have been organizations and individuals that have come forward already, and they will continue to come forward to ask that this be moved back so we can understand its impact on the community better. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? All right, then continue.
Good morning, Chair Imason, State Forester Doherty, and members of the board. Thank you so much for your time today. My name is Hannah Hagerberg, and I just want to share a few of the many ways that working forests have impacted my life. As a South Dakotan until a few years ago, I actually didn't know that much about forestry other than the pine beetles that were killing the beautiful trees of the Black Hills National Forest where I grew up. But growing up on a farming family, what I did know was that anyone who made their living off the land cared very deeply about everything they did and how it would affect them and the future generations who tried to farm or manage that land. I learned about noxious and invasive weeds and how important it was to manage them. Pulling, chopping, and spraying thistles was a regular farm chore for me growing up. I learned about caring for the land and leaving habitat for wild animals, creating new habitat, and also making sure that we were creating sustainable and suitable grazing habitat for our own animals and our own farm operations. After moving to Oregon and meeting my logger husband, I've learned so much about the working forests of Oregon. My husband owns and manages a small logging and forestry business, and anyone who has owned a small business in Oregon can tell you what a leap of faith it is and that it comes with its fair share of sleepless nights. My husband is a talented equipment operator and works hard to keep his employees not only gainfully employed, but also meeting and exceeding the Landowner and Forest Practice Act expectations. I've been very impressed as I've learned from this process how much the operators and the foresters work together with the landowners to ensure that rules are met and resources are protected. There is a culture in this industry of protecting resources and going above and beyond to ensure that they're getting the job done right the first time and every time. I'm sure that's not a surprise to anyone who's actually grown up here in Oregon. I've learned, actually, that it's at the heart of what it means to be an Oregonian. For almost 2 years now, I've been working at the Oregon Forest and Industries Council as the Community Outreach Coordinator. I've spent a portion of my summers at county fairs and local festivals talking to Oregonians about the working forest landscapes that they see every day. I've heard many comments and conversations with the people about working forests, and many of them have gone something like this. My dad was a logger, and that industry is the backbone of our community, or small landowners who say, we just did a harvest on our property, and the wildlife, the deer and the elk, are really thick. It's really cool to see the change in our landscape. And of course, this one, our lands need to be managed better in this state. These fires are bad for everyone. The things I hear in these communities, not surprisingly, tend to match up very well with the OFRI values and beliefs statement, which was part of today's consent agenda. Oregonians love and value their forests, especially their working forests, but not all of them understand how much care and protection goes into the decisions about when, how, where, and why we harvest. I wish I could show every Oregonian the operations my husband Matt works on every day. Thank you.
A question, what watershed were the gentlemen talking about? Norriston Heights. It's just immediately adjacent to Highway 101.
Okay. Yeah. Actually, the reason I asked that is it was part of my comment. But I'm Claire Clock, Corbett, Oregon, and I'm here today to Chief Doherty, Chair Imeson, and members of the board here today to talk about a municipal watershed. I went on a tour that the Corbett Water District had a month or two ago, and it was interesting. It's a small municipal water system fed by the South Fork and the North Fork of Gordon Creek and sandy drainage. The South Fork intake has been totally unusable just after a large clear cut in the drainage where it was overwhelmed by sediment. And so it take a lot of infrastructure to replace that, a lot of as far as permitting and everything like that, costly process. The other thing is the notice that the water flow has significantly decreased in the summer times, and that's based on 40 years of experience or decades of experience with that intake. There's one intake left on the main stem, and it's subject to cutting by private industry. And so if that intake is overwhelmed like the other one, then there will be no water for that particular watershed. So what I'm doing is I'm just advocating for things like arch capes. There's other examples where there's community forest. And I think that the state lands should be a part of that, where there's a conservation easement that or conservation plan that really takes a look at that contribution of that land to the municipal watersheds. The 100-year water strategy is encouraging, and we'll see how that works out. The other one is, that was a private comment. I'll make a comment now as a former or a member of the, a employee of a conservation district, and that's a present sale of private lands, on large parcels of private lands by such companies as Weyerhaeuser and others. That would sell off 300, 400, 500 acres at a time. And it's what I call the new cut and run that we had prior to the Forest Practices Act. But now what they do is they just cut the material, sell it off to people, and without replanting. And so that it goes on to the next parcel. The reason I say that is your stewardship foresters are going to be dealing with these people. They don't know what's going on, and I've dealt with it with my SWCD job, and I've referred them to the Department of Forestry. So just a little bit of heads up on what's coming down the line, because people will be they will be stunned when a stewardship forester comes out and says your land, it doesn't have trees that are free to grow. Thank you.
Relative to the first testimony, I just wondered if ODF had a response to that request for kind of stop at this point. And then I also, one of the consent agenda items related to that a bit, item 10 on state forest lands, where complex forest percentages are declining when the goal is some larger number, 30%. So I'm just wondering if maybe we can get some additional information from State Forest at some point in the future about why that's happening. But I think the two are related because they both deal with clear cutting on State Forest. So ODF response?
On the second part where you've requested information on the key performance measure number 10, I'll work with State Forest to have a response at some point. Thanks. In terms of that, we are going to be meeting and have another public meeting at the request of the council there, and we'll be discussing it with community members at that council meeting. But I haven't received a formal request for a stop. This is the first I've heard about a request to stop it. We're evaluating that timber sale, but we haven't made a decision to pull it yet.
It sounds like it's a rather rare situation for us to have immediate neighbors. So it does seem to a timber sale like this with homes so close by. So it's certainly an unusual situation that does appear to need some review.
So just to be real clear, so that we don't stray from the board's duties, it's a notwithstanding other provision of the law, the board shall not supervise or direct the state forester relating to the geographic scheduling, appraisals, species allocation, and competitive timber sales technique used in the sale of forest products on state forest lands. So just to be real clear, you're not directing me or giving me any advice in this matter. So thanks.
I think it would be helpful to understand the process that will be used to make these decisions.
Great.
I had just one other question for Hannah. It sounds like you do, your job is outreach, right? And sounds, you know, from the way you were describing, it sounds like you do a lot of outreach in rural areas where people will tend to agree with you. Are you doing outreach into Portland?
I actually spend probably about 30% of my time in Eugene, so I'm not totally wrapped up in the rural areas.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you, all of you.